This is Writer's Voice. We talk to writers of all genres about matters that move us and make us think. Welcome to the show. I'm Francesca Rhiannon.
The fight against violence is not always an angry one. Sometimes it's a meditative one. Sometimes it's a very self-reflective and self-examining one.
That's poet Franny Lindsay. We talked to her today about her book, Lamb. Its poems treat the themes of trauma and healing. Poet Franny Lindsay rescues greyhounds, dogs that usually have been reared in very abusive conditions by racetrack operators. She has a special bond with them, not least perhaps because she herself experienced abuse when she was growing up. In her poetry volume, Lamb, she's turned her spare and sensitive poetic voice to exploring themes of abuse and trauma, and the healing wrought by working with memory through the lens of art and love. Lamb is Lindsay's second book of poetry. It won the 2006 Perugia Press Award and was a runner-up for the James Laughlin Award from the Academy of American Poets. Her first volume, Where She Always was published in 2004. Her poems have appeared in the Atlantic Monthly, the Yale Review, and the Harvard Review, among other venues. They've also been read by Garrison Keillor on National Public Radio's Writer's Almanac. Franny Lindsay lives in Belmont, Massachusetts, with her two retired greyhounds. Franny Lindsay, welcome to Writer's Voice.
Thank you. It's wonderful to be here.
It says right on the jacket here that your poems are about abuse, trauma, and healing. Why the centrality of these themes to your poetry?
I think that a lot of these things have been popularized. This topic has, since the 80s or so, been really popularized and written a lot about. And I wanted to give it, a face. I wanted to give it some particularities. I wanted to give it both a smaller and larger truth than it might otherwise have.
A smaller and larger truth?
Yeah. By that, I mean, it's sensational and it's awful to hear that so many people in this society have grown up with abuse in their lives. When you read individual stories, you realize that this kind of trauma has lots and lots of faces, and there's really no such thing as lesser trauma or greater trauma. It's trauma, and one lives with that and the effects of that for his or her entire life. And those effects can be both strength-giving and strength-subtracting.
Yes, the popular idea is that what doesn't kill you makes you stronger, but I'm not always sure that's true.
That's not true. I wanted to sort of somehow address that glorifies something that has no intrinsic glory in it.
You know, yesterday or a few days ago, I got an email from a publicist who's handling a poet, is publicizing her work and workshops, and they are all around this idea of poetry as healing.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if that's also a part of your motivation in doing poetry and in publishing these poems.
Well, yes and no. I mean, I separate myself, I separate my life from what is it that's healing and what is it that's art. I primarily look at my writing when it's working as writing. It's not about healing, it's not about anything, it's about writing.
And yet you came to this theme. Can you say something, do you want to say something about your own personal motivations in working with these themes in your poetry?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think any of us, I subscribe to the philosophy that we write best writing from what's closest to us. So I write from what I know, and I know family, I know what's in the heart of those of us who have lived with things like that.
Things like?
Things like troubled families and, you know, secrets.
Do you have a poem that expresses that, the secrets?
Yes, I do.
And living with the secrets.
I'll read you something he did. One day, when nobody else was home, my father polished off the last of the beer, stripped down to just his cuffed dungarees, and stood on the porch and quit thinking long enough to shut out the bird noise, then struck with his father's 10-pound axe again and again what would have been the pear tree's waist if it were a girl.
And here the pear tree is a stand-in for a girl.
Yeah.
Say something more about this poem.
Well, I wanted it also to sort of address legacy. I mean, it was my father's 10-pound axe. So there's something about heritage and handing down and victims of victims. So it's not just about, it's about something much bigger than one person.
And yet very contained in a very short poem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Tell us about the density of that container.
Well, all of my poems, people remark that all of my poems are very dense, very short, and that's kind of what my craft is about. I like to use very few words. My eye is drawn into pieces that are very, very sparse and have a lot of white space around them. And so I sort of write by subtraction.
How does that process work?
I'll do a lot of writing and then crossing out, or a poem will come sort of like a negative game of pickup sticks. I'm working on a piece right now where it started with one sort of 5 or 6 word image, and I see how fragile that image is, and I want to add to it, and I've tried, and I think, oh no, you can't add that little tiny extra detail. Your little house is going to break. So it's sort of like adding one little stick at a time so that nothing gets disturbed.
So a real pruning process.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. There's another poem, a poem that starts out the book, The Ewe Lamb. Mm-hmm. Could you read that book for us and maybe set us up a little bit about it?
Sure. This poem is based on a parable from the book of Samuel. And when I first read this parable, it just was like getting a knife through the heart, even though it's only a parable. I had a very, very strong reaction to it, so I sat down and wrote a persona poem.
And what is the parable?
The parable is about, is that of a poor man who had only one lamb and a rich man who had many, and a stranger coming along being hungry and deciding that he wants the poor man's lamb. And this was a lamb that this man had raised as his own.
A common story.
Yeah. The ewe lamb. I raised my one ewe lamb as a daughter, fed her red clover, the last hearts of my cabbage, offered her inky lips my cup. She rested her chin on my neck at night, her hoofs on my cloak, her breathing, the wind on the waves of sleep's pure waters. Sleep, an animal's word for bless, hoof of her heart to the hoof of my heart. The dusk before her slaughter, we walked together, pauper and kin, over the meadow. I sang to her, then I unstrung the rusted bell from her collar.
This is such a powerful poem about, as you say, kinship and suffering and guilt.
And I think about sacrifice, literal sacrifice. Yes, and guilt.
And sometimes trauma is a sacrifice. Children mm-hmm. are sacrificed within a family.
Yes, and I think this poem is also about mourning. One cannot suffer a trauma without also suffering an enormous loss. And so there's a death in trauma, whether it's a literal or a figurative death. There is a death.
And also the blossoming of compassion.
Yes. Yes.
My guest is Franny Lindsay. She is the 2006 winner of the Perugia Press Poetry Award. She lives in Belmont, Massachusetts. Her book, Lamb, is what we're talking about now. It is a chapbook in three parts. Now, talk about these three different parts of this book. What are their themes?
I wanted to sort of gently and quietly bring in themes of violence.
Gently and quietly?
Yes, that sounds contradictory. But I think in some ways it isn't, because I'm talking about memory here, and I'm talking about reflection. And the focus of the book is also forgiveness. I think that sort of blankets and maybe unites the three sections. The first section quietly leads the reader into topics around violence. And by quietly, I mean that the fight against violence is not always an angry one. Sometimes it's a meditative one. Sometimes it's a very self-reflective and self-examining one. So the poems in the first section are memory poems and, you know, poems of looking back, retrospection poems. The second section is poems of compassion. Poems of tenderness. It's a resting section. It sort of gives the reader a little bit of breathing room, a little bit of time to sit down and find the love and experience, you know, the great tenderness that one feels as a response to violence in the world.
Could you read us a section?
A poem, sure.
Read us a poem from that section.
Yeah.
And again, tell us what it is and set us up.
Sure. I'm going to read you two dog poems. I am a rescuer of greyhounds. I've been doing that since 1993. I've had six greyhounds come and go from my life. Each one of them has been an absolutely blessed being. I now have two. So that means that I have lost four. And with each of these dogs, I've had a very, very close and special bond. One in particular came into my life as an older dog, and he had been found abandoned and in terrible shape. And I brought him in, and he was a great source of humor and joy to my life. And also he had moments in which he was my caregiver. And this poem is called Friend.
And what was his name?
Henry. Friend. An old blonde dog takes care of me. I found him starving in the snow. His face is scarred. His hips protrude. His joints are stiff. Doddering along, he lists a bit, and more, he is incontinent. Yet when I'm most alone, he brings me his old polar bear, the sock he likes to chew. His white chin fits my darkest aches and settles there.
You have two greyhounds now?
Yes.
You said you had another dog poem also.
Yeah. I want to read you this one because it's a very sad poem that makes me really smile. Now, I read to my dog from a takeout menu so he can sleep. When he tires of that, I talk to him about nothing, and when I run out of things to say, I make up words to a song with whatever array of notes and breath streams in the way the clean wind did as we rode once, and I rolled down the window a hair, and he sat up without effort, glossy nose in the speeding weather, eyes half closed in the light that whizzed through his fur like the hands of a friend who had missed him.
There is such tenderness here and compassion. Say something about, for those of our listeners who may not know the situation of greyhounds, what does it mean to be a greyhound rescuer?
What it means is that you are giving a very special animal a chance at life. And what I mean by special is these animals, these dogs, are by nature very, very docile. And they will kind of let someone do to them as that person wants to do. So they come off the track situation with no rancor, no resentment. Some of them are very frightened from what they've seen and lived with. But you just don't see a greyhound coming off the track bent out of shape or aggressive. If anything, they seem to be very, very grateful, very ready to be loved, and more than other breeds, very intuitive to people. They're very, very sensitive dogs. And I love that about them. They pick up on things in their people that other breeds don't. And the dog that I read about in the friend poem really did those things. I remember having a fever once, and he would come and put his chin on my forehead, or a backache, and he would come and put his chin on my back. And he just knew what to do, and these dogs know what to do.
You were talking before about the theme of compassion, mm-hmm. and it seems to me that you're talking right here about an embodiment of it, in both ways, both you
yes.
and the dog.
Yes, yes. I mean, as someone who is well acquainted with trauma, I sort of feel like this is a wonderful fit. Having a dog whose history you understand is very difficult. It gives you a lot of patience. The female dog I have right now was pretty much unadoptable when I brought her home. She was just so frightened. And I, the first 3 months, which happened to be the dead of winter 3 years ago, she wouldn't leave the house. So I would, the machinations I went through to get her out the door were exhausting. I put on my layers and layers of coats and scarves, and her layers and layers of coats and scarves, and tried to goad her toward the door. And if she heard a noise outside, she would just slink back to bed, and we would start all over again, and each time with a little tastier piece of food. And finally I worked up to buying her the most expensive cut of roast beef I could. And after an hour and a half of trying to get Mabel to the door, I would realize I was very hungry. And so there was this nice piece of roast beef in my hand, and I would look at my watch and realize it was lunchtime anyway, and I would eat the roast beef, and we would start from scratch.
That's a wonderful story. We're talking with poet Franny Lindsay about her book, Lamb. It won the 2006 Perugia Press Intro Award for the best first or second book of poetry by a woman. Now, you said before, you talked about memory.
Mm-hmm.
Say more about memory, how you see memory, and then give us another poem that might illustrate that.
Okay. Well, my memories keep me sane. My memories give me a lot of very much at a distance information. My memories do not overwhelm me because they are nothing but information. I'm glad I have them. They're my friends. And they give me images, and they give me story. And they sort of help me pan out and look at topics of abuse and topics of trauma, and sort of see that my poems are not poems about my father. My poems are poems about fathers. My poems are poems about the father and the daughter. And, you know, what is that father-daughter relationship fraught with for any father, any daughter?
And what is it fraught with?
Well, it's fraught with risk. It's fraught with fragility. It's fraught with a closeness that demands great care, great respect, and great awareness.
Not something in very large supply often in our culture.
Right. Not something in very large supply. Very limited.
Could you read us something now from the third section Sure. of your book and tell us where what the theme is here?
Well, the theme in the third section is really about watching my father become a child and watching the way the roles sort of flip over upside down, and he's the one whose boundaries can be violated so easily. And so the job of the daughter is to really, really take care to not violate those boundaries, even though they're right there and they've already, in a sense, been violated.
His boundaries?
Well, yeah, by being an old person with caregivers coming in and, you know, doing things that haven't been done to him since he was a baby. I'll read you the poem, Crying. I want to say about this, my father died a year ago at the age of almost 98, and his last years were very hard on him. He was afraid to die, and he wanted to die, and both of them were the same thing. So this is really about that. Crying. My father is crying because he has just been told he can have his recliner from home. He does not want his recliner from home, or his desk, or his books, or pictures of us, or him when young. The things he loves that are there, that he left there in that vacant place behind, must be angry at him. He misses them, but he can only stammer to please not bring them. No. He is afraid of their shouting, and so he does not want these things in this room that has room now only for him, him and his crying.
So tell us a little bit more about your father, and what about your mother?
Well, my mother died years before he did, and she was much, much more private. So my relationship with her was defined by distance, by love and by distance. And there was a great deal of story and poetry in that distance. She really treasured her secrets and treasured us treasuring our secrets. And so what I think I learned my silence in poetry from my mother, who was not so coincidentally deaf by the time she died and also almost blind. But her deafness contained a lot.
And what did you learn from your father?
Well, from my father, I learned he was a kind of bright, shining example of how not to be, although I loved him very dearly, and I also didn't love him. Watching him go broke my heart. It was very, very sad watching him go, because he both wanted to go and didn't want to go, and because he became a child.
I guess in the time that we have left, I'd like to ask you to read perhaps your favorite poem out of this book, if you have one, and tell us what it is, set us up again, and why it might be your favorite.
Well, I'm going to read you the last poem, and the next to the last poem in the book. This is a poem about my mother, and it's in a way a very simple poem, because it's talking about her joy, and in talking about her joy, of course, you talk about sorrow. But it was a poem that I had wanted to write for 14 or 15 years. It's about one of my mother's last very slow walks to the water. And my mother loved to swim. And by swim, I mean maybe just standing in the water and moving her arms. She was a very slow swimmer, and finally she really just liked to wade. And the last time that I helped her down to the ocean, she could hardly walk, she could hardly hear, but she just wanted to go down and put her toe in. So I'm going to read you this poem called Walking an Old Woman into the Sea. She doesn't need her bathing cap, but she wants it on. The rubber peony over one temple, the ear flaps up, and the scratched yellow goggles that won't get wet today belong right here around her neck. She can't hear the gulls' beady voices yak over our sandwich crusts, or the sea out late again tripping home over its skirts, and she frets about where I have left her terry cloth jacket and watch. But she knows by the popping of stones and shell bits under her flip-flops, and by my own aged hands that grip the slack, elastic waist of her suit, that this is a swim day, no matter how long the water will have to wait.
What a wonderful image of the care with which both of you are going down to the sea. And the water is waiting for you both.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And I think, too, it's a poem about a death. I think of this when I see this image of an old woman being walked very, very slowly down a beach into the ocean. I can't help but think about her death.
And how old are you when she died?
She was almost 90 when she died, and I was about 47.
Wow, she had you quite late.
Yes.
Well, Franny Lindsay, thanks so much for coming into Writer's Voice.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah, reading these wonderful poems. The chapbook is Lamb. It's published by Perugia Press, and it won the Perugia Press Award of 2006. Thanks again.
Thank you.
Well, that's it this week for Writer's Voice. Please join us next week when we talk with Ellen Cooney about her rambunctious, picaresque novel, Lambrusco. It's about an aria-singing widow in wartime Italy who's on a quest to find her son, a resistance fighter, and the many adventures she encounters along the way. If you're on a quest to find out more about Writer's Voice or listen to past shows, go to writersvoice.net and send your comments and suggestions to writersvoice@wmua.org. Thanks for listening. I'm your host, Francesca Rhiannon.